Vodacom saw first half HEPS decline 13.5% versus a full year 2019 Bloomberg estimate of a decline of 2.46%. HEPS were up 6% if you exclude the charges relating to the BEE deal announced mid-year. And the contribution from Safaricom is certainly showing that that was a good deal that's bedding down nicely. We saw revenue up 5.6% versus a Bloomberg full-year consensus of around 6.4%. Services revenue up 6.1% and group earnings up 3.4%, a strong improvement in the international operations. And among the telcos, Vodacom boasts a best-in-class management team, which has delivered a data-led revenue growth inflection. Over the medium term, enterprise and international certainly offer some interesting incremental upside. However, balancing this will require a balancing act on the dividend, which took center stage at Vodacom's results today. And I've got CEO Shameel Joosub on the line. Evening, Shameel.
Evening, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thanks. The market seemed to respond quite abruptly to this set of numbers. Now, I want to start off talking about how you allocate and manage capital, because I think after a very lean 2018 financial year, your dividends were cut slightly. You've now raised the dividend for the first half of this financial back to the same level that you paid in 17 and 16. And looking through the numbers, Vodacom's return on capital employed has actually exceeded your weighted average cost of capital on an average by just over 21% per annum over the last decade. That makes you a class-leading capital allocator in the telco space. How do you approach your capital allocation in such a capex-intensive sector, but one that is also transitioning quite rapidly from voice to data-led growth?
I think a lot of it, Michael, is driven around the need and the want to invest. So, you know, we have less markets, but we make sure that we capitalize those markets appropriately. One, two is, you know, I think we do really good deals on infrastructure, you know, leveraging off the Vodafone group, but also leveraging off our own footprint. So we do make sure that we try and drive down, you know, our costs to deploy network. But also, I think, you know, having a very, very good technical team has always been one of our big successes.
And on the dividend front, you increased that slightly, despite the fact that earnings are under pressure. What do you foresee on the dividend front throughout the next 6 months and into the next financial?
I think it's important, Michael, to note that if we exclude the BE charges and the Safaricom acquisition, HEPS is actually up 6%. So, you know, I think our guidance is that, you know, is mid to high single-digit growth. So that's our expectations going forward. I think the impact of the BE deal now playing through in the numbers. I mean, the share has over the last couple of months post the BE deal obviously come under pressure because there is obviously a cost of doing BE. That said, you know, we had similar issues even when we did the Safaricom acquisition. If you remember the full year, even though we had fantastic results from Safaricom coming through, the share price came under pressure because people didn't realize that there was a dilution, even though well communicated.
But you have managed to increase the dividend despite the extra shares in issue there. Talk to me about the Safaricom deal and how that's bedding down for you, because those numbers really do look like it was a fantastic transaction.
Yes, so it's been a really strong growth in Safaricom. 18.1% growth in EBIT for the half, and you know, I think from that perspective, we're quite pleased with the results, and it continues to be a big growth market for us, and also very big obviously on mobile money. 30% of the growth, 30% of the business being mobile money, so you know, quite impressive, and that part is still growing at 18%.
And Shameel, you told me at the full years that you see Vodacom having 50 million mobile money customers within 3 to 5 years. Back then, at the end of March, you had about 32.3 million M-Pesa customers in your various markets. How many are you boasting now?
We're now up to 34 million. And we're now moving 1.6 trillion rand through the M-Pesa platform. So, you know, It's just a massive, massive business for us now.
And you're obviously trying to drive growth. One is taking M-Pesa into new African markets, but you said you're also going to be looking for growth by convincing more Vodacom customers to take up this service. How are you innovating to ensure that more people start using mobile money in markets where we have fairly sophisticated banking channels and perhaps mobile money isn't the first option for consumers?
Well, look, I mean, what we've done is financial services for us is a big play, and I would separate between what we do in the three different markets. So in South Africa, our financial services business will be about R1 billion business this year, R1 billion profit business. So having grown 400% in the last 18 months. And in there's insurance, basically airtime advance, where we advance people money if they run out of airtime, buying airtime directly from us, and then creating a digital wallet so people can pay for electricity, water, and so on from us. And we've also launched our own payment gateway, like PayPal. So that's the South African part. In the internationals, M-Pesa is just flying. I mean, 1.4 billion of revenue. In the half, 25% growth, strong growth in customers to 13.2 million customers, so almost 23% growth in the number of customers. And then Safaricom is just about, you know, growing the number of transactions, so still almost 9% growth in customers to 21 million customers using M-Pesa in Safaricom, and 18.2% growth in revenues, 4.7 billion rand. Coming through from M-Pesa.
Very impressive numbers, those. Now, locally, you've also concluded a roaming deal with Telkom. It should go some way to filling the void left by Cell C when they signed with MTN. And it's a trend that we've seen. The larger operators, such as yourselves and MTN, you run high fixed cost-based networks, and you need to push volume through this, and roaming deals largely fall through to the bottom line. And they do make sense, despite enabling the competition to some degree. Are you not worried about that risk for Vodacom, that consumers could increasingly opt for Telkom, which has far more aggressively priced its offering and its tariffs, while taking advantage of your superior network?
Well, I think it's, yes, it does give Telkom a leg up, but as you say, it's also very beneficial to us, both from a cost perspective and also on a returns perspective and so on. So, you know, I think overall positive, but remember, they're only using the sites, meaning you still have to have your own core network, you still got to have your own transmission and so on. So it's although an important element of the network, it's a element of the network. That said, you know, I think it's also important for us to make sure that our pricing is competitive. And I think if you look recently at what we've done with the big data bundle space, the 5 gigs, 10 gigs, 20 gigs, and so on, we've significantly increased our competitiveness there. And the reason you're seeing a bit of a subdued result in the first half on data is because we've taken some deliberate moves to deal with out of bundle, but also to increase competitiveness.
And that's obviously a big talking point in the local market, Shamil. We've had the Competition Commission's inquiry into data prices last month. There's a whole debate around the cost of data versus the quality of the service that we're getting in South Africa. And I think that's important if we're going to be comparing apples with apples, and not apples and oranges here. Your data prices came down by 16.4% over the interim, as you just alluded to. But when it comes to data and to delivering that data, what are the cost drivers for you? And in particular, I want to have a look at what's happening in the wholesale market, because some very interesting arguments were put forward at the recent hearings that that's really where the regulatory failure lies.
Well, you know, and my answer to that is that the issue is not wholesale. The issue is your underlying cost to carry data. In fact, your wholesale, if you brought wholesale pricing in and you were forced to do wholesale pricing to people, you'd be making the situation worse, not better, because you're adding another layer into it. Our issue is not a distribution issue. Our issue is a underlying cost driver. Now, you've got to, when you look at it, Michael, you've got to take into account the fact that we've not had spectrum since 2004. We don't have a lack of investment in the South African market, and the quality of our networks, I venture to say, are up there among the best in the world, if not better. You know, so it's definitely in the top 12 of quality of networks. That said, when you're spending capital, so we're spending, it's not a lack of investment. But if you ask me, are we spending capital completely optimally? My answer would be no. And the way to think about it is that when you have a lot of, there's only so much that can be done technically to add capacity to a site. Okay, then you've got to be able, then you've got to start building new sites. When you start to build new sites, you add additional costs. Now, what access to spectrum, you can reutilize that same site and add capacity to the same site, which drives down your underlying cost to carry. So the way I liken it is, if you want to drop prices faster, you've got to drop the cost to carry that data faster. And spectrum is the key to be able to do it. So once you have access to spectrum, it starts to drive down your cost faster. So remember, we are dropping prices every year to the tune of 16% and so on this year, and 40% over the last 3 years. But essentially, if you drop the underlying cost to carry, you can drop those prices even faster.
Because otherwise, we're just going to see a margin erosion to the point where no business would cannibalize itself to that extent here. If you look at your growth in new customers, and we have seen an impressive rise in customer growth. That said, your ARPUs are coming down at the same time. So, I mean, if we look at that, are we just saying here that out of the 4.8 million customers you've added for the half year, that's up almost 11%, 2.5 million of those in South Africa, the rest in your international operations. If that's being partly offset by a lower prepaid ARPU, is this a trend that's going to continue into the future?
No, what happens is, as you're adding these more customers onto the base, one has to take into account that these are lower spending customers. So essentially, by bringing them on, you do see a dilution in your ARPU, and over time they grow. So I think if we look at the actual performance of the base, if one can call it that, outside of the new acquisitions, then you are seeing growing ARPU, not declining ARPU.
Right. Now, back to the regulatory concerns at home. You did say in these results that while you're encouraged by the progress, and we have seen quite a bit of progress in the regulatory environment in recent times. There's a clearer timeline on the allocation of 4G and 5G, and as you've just articulated, that's very important. You still pointed to a number of concerns and what you called inconsistencies following the publication of that revised Electronic Communications Act, as well as the policy direction to ICASA regarding that unassigned high-demand spectrum. Can you just elaborate on what you see as some of the key inconsistencies?
Well, there's a few inconsistencies. Firstly, the directive and the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill don't necessarily talk to each other, because the directive is done under is basically for spectrum to be auctioned under the current legislation. So that's the one part. However, the amendment bill, and obviously in the auction, you're going to have to spend a lot of money to buy spectrum. The amendment bill weakens some of those arguments, because you're going for a wholesale open access network, so you're having what we would call a wholesale open access network, which will probably get the spectrum at a discount or free, versus the industry that's going to have to pay for it. Now, if you're going to be paying for the spectrum, you need certain rights on those spectrum. The Electronic Communications Bill doesn't completely respect that part that you're paying for it. So I call it housekeeping. They have to fix and align that, because you have found a solution, which is the hybrid model.
Yeah, and that will be a solution that you would be comfortable with.
Correct.
If they can fix the housekeeping issues, obviously,
exactly.
within the broader regulation there. Shamil, obviously you're going through a transformation as well as an organization. You are currently in the midst of a digital telco strategy that you've articulated on in the past. The aim really to increase in this digital process and this offering and this value offering that you bring to subscribers and to users, to enhance the customer experience, to use the industry lingo. How are you making this possible through things like, artificial intelligence and all of these big buzzwords of the fourth industrial revolution? Robotic process automation is another one, and big data.
Well, I think, Michael, one of the big ones that we've been running for about 3 years now is our product called Just For You. And this uses what we call machine learning and artificial intelligence to basically personalize offers to customers. So based on your own behavior, the machine learns and then presents you with offers that are that you're most likely to take up. And we see huge success. So about 68% of what we sell is through Just For You. We've now rolled that out to all the countries. So that's the one side. On the other side, we're using big data analytics to, one, help us to do what we call smart CapEx deployment, putting the sites in the right space, using the right technologies at the right point in time, and so on. And so that's the one part, but also to do things like call prediction. Who's going to call us next month? And the system has the ability to predict with something like a 75% accuracy who's going to call us next month. And then what we do is we then digitalize that. So if you're calling us, say, for example, for balance inquiries, we then proactively send you the balance inquiry so you don't call. That has helped to drive down calls to the call center by about 20% this year. So and then also we're deploying what we call RPA or robotics process automation, where you take certain mundane and repetitive processes and use bots to be able to do it. So these all drive efficiencies within the business.
Very interesting examples of what I've been chatting to Professor Brian Armstrong, who's chair of digital business over at WITS, all about over the last few weeks, this example of how repetitive tasks are being disrupted, not necessarily whole jobs, but it is a very interesting time that we're living in this age of the fourth industrial revolution. Shamil, we're going to have to leave it there and look forward to chatting to you at your full years later on. Take care.
Thanks, Michael.